This is 69, the podcast. I'm Dave Haynes. 69 has been covering the digital signage industry since the dawn of man, first online and now as a podcast. The goal on here is to make listeners aware of interesting companies, smart people, and new technology developments, all of them meaningful in making digital signage projects happen. I try to help listeners understand sometimes complicated subjects and why they should care. The podcasts are free and I try to get a new one out weekly, but things happen now and then. The 69 podcast has been gratefully sponsored and supported since the start by Jeremy Gavin and the fine folks at ScreenFeed, the digital signage content store. ScreenFeed makes beautiful looking, totally automated content for signage and digital out-of-home networks. Check them out at screenfeed.com. 69 has been around since 2006, and the publication and podcast are now owned by Spectrio, which provides customer engagement solutions for business. You can find them at spectrio.com. One of the terms the digital signage community is going to start seeing more often is headless CMS. The idea of getting away from the walled garden nature of many to most digital signage platforms and instead offering something that is open and flexible. Most software platforms out there are still variations on walled gardens, but I've been hearing from a few companies that have re-architected their code and platforms to be some version of headless. One of the early adopters, pretty predictably, is Signage Live, a UK CMS software firm that has a knack for staying very current with technology advances and for developing a platform that is very open and malleable, but also secure. CEO Jason Kremens was one of the first poor souls nutty enough to come on this podcast, and I was surprised to sort out that it had been almost 6 years since we had that first chat. I was very happy to catch up with him and dig into what headless CMS is all about, who's using it, and why. We also get into another interesting thing the company has developed, secure dashboards, a stable, secure, and easy way to get visualized data on digital signage screens. Jason, thank you for joining me. We've spoken in the past, we've spoken many times actually, but for a podcast, and I looked it up and saw it was like 6 years ago. So you're one of the first victims.
Yeah, thanks, Dave. Yeah, it's hard to believe. I can't believe it's 6 years ago that we had that conversation.
Mm-hmm. I wanted to talk to you to catch up in a lot of ways around Signage Live, but I was particularly interested because for the last year or so, I'd say you've been talking up a concept that is just kind of nibbling at the edges of digital signage consciousness, if you want to put it in that way. People are just starting to understand this idea of headless CMS. And also talk a little bit about another product of yours, Secure Dashboards, because they're two concepts that I'd say are not terribly well known within the digital signage industry yet, but will be.
Yeah, thanks for that. Yeah, the whole concept of headless for us has come about really through the need from the channel partners that we have and the customers that we have. And at its core, what it really allows us to do is expose absolutely everything that you can do with Signage Live as a platform and in terms of the management and the control of players through a series of APIs. And those APIs then allow third-party organizations to build solutions around the core Signage Live capabilities.
So this is a lot more than the old concept of white labeling a CMS platform, so you don't really know who the vendor is, but you're still using it the way it was written and the UX that's there and everything else. This is the tools, and then you can write it and use it the way you want, right?
Yeah, absolutely. It's code level control, really. So in terms of the, we're the engine underneath the hood with the delivery platform. I suppose in the same way that organizations are building solutions on top of AWS for web apps, we're looking to achieve a similar proposition for our partners who want to build custom solutions on top of Signage Live for a whole range of applications. And I think one of the key things is digital signage is just one of those. You know, the outputs can be many and varied.
So why would they want to do that? My understanding is you've got organizations that produce content for a whole bunch of endpoints, not just digital signage endpoints, just a whole variety of them. And they don't want to have to back out of what they use, the tools they use for all those things, and then log into digital signage to do that one little piece of it and then back out and do the other stuff. Is that a fair assessment?
I think it is. Yeah, it depends on who the customer is, where the need's been driven from. So if it's a specialist digital signage reseller, who are providing a full managed service for their customers, then it may well be that they want to be a present a portal or a user experience that is unified across maybe different tools that they're providing that customer, different management tools. We've got one partner, for example, who have got some really good connections into the Google Chrome management device environment and the APIs that Google provide. And they want that to be kind of wrapped up with the CMS capabilities. And so therefore they're using Signage Live for that component. So yeah, certainly from a point of view of the integrator, it is very much about presenting a unified solution, their own custom user journey effectively and workflows for that for their customers. And then what we're finding for end users, it's very much about those community developers and organizations where they've got existing business logic and workflow in place, and they want to avoid having to replicate those tasks. So how can we just, you know, move digital signage and publishing of data and receiving of information about the device and the statuses into the existing tools that we already use within the business?
So what would that look like in something like, let's say, an interactive agency that's doing a pile of work for a big corporate client?
Yeah, what it would look like for them is that they would typically work with us. We'd set up a development environment. We've got obviously extensive documentation and examples of what can be achieved. We would assist them in terms of setting up example code and just really working through, I suppose, the story, what is the problem we're trying to solve. That's what we're trying to do in business, is how they're trying to solve a problem for a particular customer. And then what we would do then is point them in the right direction of the various APIs that we have. So if it's, for example, the ability to either hard trigger or soft trigger content, we've got APIs that allow you to do that. If it's the ability to take data and ingress that and have that displayed within HTML5 content, again, we've got APIs that allow you to do that too. So we've got a range of entry points, I suppose, around the core platform, APIs and SDKs, and it would allow us then to work with that agency really to build the solutions for their customers.
So would they then have to build a brand new interface to deal with all that, or could it be layered into what they're already using?
Totally layered into what they're already using. I mean, if they're using modern web technologies, typically they have API capabilities or certainly they've got accessibility or capability within their teams to be able to build out those user interfaces. I mean, there's been over, obviously, recent years with the way that web technologies have moved, there's been very much a separation between the visual experience and what's being delivered on the front end to users in portals and UI UXs, whether it be, you know, across mobile or across the whole range, and the actual business logic and the doing behind the scenes, you know, database distribution, media management, etc. So yeah, very much they can build it however they want as long as they adhere to the APIs that we have in place.
Is there a degree of transparency? So let's say you have a reseller or an integrator that you're working with, and they have big corporate client of some kind, a retailer, QSR, whatever it may be. Do they know that it's Signage Live under the hood, or are you completely, you know, behind the curtains?
Well, we're completely behind the curtains. I mean, they, you know, from our point of view, everything is transparent. For example, the customer would be logging into their portal. So therefore we are the code downstream of any actions that they're taking on that portal. There's no reference to Signage Live. The way that licenses are procured and added to devices, the way those devices are presented is all, again, completely transparent. And the partner can decide what that's called, how that looks, you know, without any reference to Signage Live. And then when you're on the device end, you know, the pages such as activation codes or, you know, notices of expiry, all those other things are completely customizable as well and programmable by the partner. So yeah, from our point of view, our role there with those organizations that we're working with is to provide them the support, you know, and provide them the tools and extend the APIs as they require and allow them to go and build their book of business around that core.
Does this require a different kind of support for your reseller ecosystem in terms of if it's your own product and it's visibly Signage Live that you're working with and you do a new version release or whatever, you push it out and everybody knows about it. With this, you have a tool set and then you have the integrator with its own tool set, its front end that it's written on top of this. So do you have to say we've changed this about our API or whatever that you need to deal with?
Yeah, no, that's a very, very good point. And I think that starts from the outset, because the minute we've, I suppose, done the initial discovery and the qualification that there is, you know, genuine interest, and also they've got the capabilities within their organization to undertake the type of integration that would be required with our APIs, then the commercial team completely steps out of the way. The regular end user and channel support team step aside, and those partners are provided direct access to the development team. So it's very much a developer-to-developer conversation around utilizing the tools and the various code samples and all the other bits that are required, and that's a completely separate Slack environment that those guys can work on together and have that kind of trust, I suppose, and build up that relationship to build these solutions with us commercial and regular support team getting involved.
Mm-hmm. What took you down this path? Was it headless CMS is a broader concept in Web3 or whatever you want to call it anyways, but did you see this as a trend that you wanted to get on top of, or were you being asked about it?
A bit of both, I would say. I think one of the things that we were looking to re-engineer our own platform, and it made sense that we became the first consumer of our own APIs. So I think there was a conscious decision to do that, and that journey probably started 3+ years ago. And every line of code we've written since has been API first. So we've crafted and come up with the API architecture, and then decided, we're going to build on top of that in terms of the user experience within Signage Live. So I think that was one of the key things. But then also we were getting a lot of requirements for integration with, say, business workflows and tools that people were already using, beyond just, shuffling content from a third-party platform down to a screen. Mm-hmm. And then also extending that capability into local environments. We've got APIs, to say, that allow us to trigger either immediately or soft trigger, i.e. do this next. And then we've built out another API, which we call real-time events, which runs across the different devices we support, that allow to extend that further through code to interact with non-web technologies, so things like serial devices, lighting control, all those other things that that are required. When you get down into a physical presence, you want to build an experience. It's beyond just sending web requests. It's been a combination of both, and that's been both end users that have approached us, and we've had conversations around their needs, and also then the partners and integration organizations that we're working with who are building out these experiences based on what the customer wants to achieve.
And this isn't just conceptual at this point. You have clients who are using it in this way now, right?
Yeah, we've from our point of view, in terms of the commercial model is really the thing that determines where the split is. So we have traditionally, we've sold licenses and then subsequently services and plans, and they've gone through the traditional channel model. Whether it be distribution, mm-hmm. resellers. This is more of a consumption model. So it's a ability for, it's at the first level, the ability to activate licenses as required and deactivate those as required. That's been a kind of key element of what we've done. And then further on with as we'll get on to other products, it's true consumption. It's about the actual the amount of usage that you need from the platform.
So are there companies and projects that you can talk about that are actively using the headless CMS model?
Yeah, we can. One of the organizations that we're working with, and they're actually included in a white paper that's on our website, is Entwined, who are down in Australia. And we've been working with Entwined now for the last 2.5 years as they start to build out their digital signage strategy. And they were, I suppose, disillusioned with the challenges they had trying to work across multiple different CMS platforms to meet the mm-hmm. needs of different customers in different sectors. So we work very closely with them to become their engine for their success. And I think one of the big attractions is it's also that we've got this very wide support for different player technology into the 30+ different platforms that we support and different variants. And they wanted that. They didn't want to be kind of restricted by a single CMS's support for a certain hardware technology or a certain, you know, operating system. So so we work with Entwine to build that out, and we've got some significant wins together. But they will, we'll allow them to kind of make those announcements as they come along.
So in that case, there is it mostly a managed service model for them?
It is from their point of view, absolutely a managed service model. So we support them as a technical team. Mm-hmm. To ensure they've got everything they need. And from their perspective, they are providing a full managed proposition for their customers. So they are direct to their customers, providing a full, installation, maintenance, content services, marketing strategy, everything that's required to deliver a successful solution.
Yeah, it's interesting because I was saying to somebody the other day that one of the trends I see happening is you have quote unquote solutions providers, integrators, companies that normally just do installations and so on, adding more service capabilities because there's more recurring revenue there. And it would be mightily challenging if you are at the mercy of the software companies to get a particular piece of functionality or whatever added to their roadmap, and then you wait for it to actually come together and so on. And then you've got to, as you said, support all these things versus having a lot more control over what you can do and narrowing it down to one provider. But I guess there's still the challenge that even with that, they're still waiting a little bit on functionality to be delivered on at your end, right?
Occasionally, I think most of the time, what we're seeing is there's an opportunity to bring in other adjacent technologies. So, with Entwine and with other partners we're working with, maybe for example, audience analytics. We've got certain partners and certain work that we've done in that space. But if they've got a particular partner they're working with, then there's absolutely no reason where they can't combine what we're doing in terms of providing proof of play and accountability in terms of what the player is doing with the media play back, and then combining that in parallel with other information, and then delivering that as a complete a set of data and set of insights for individual customers. So I think there's as much. It's about really understanding what the need is. If it's not core to what we're doing as an organization, if it doesn't benefit the wider community of companies that we have, and bearing in mind a lot of the APIs that we do develop at their core are for enterprise customers. And so we see things the other way around as well, is that it's kind of exciting for our API headless customers when we can say, well, actually, for example, we've built out our granular user permissions model, which has now got over 150 different flags that you can turn on and off per user. And by the way, we've got a new hierarchies infrastructure coming along, and we're just launching 2FA for security. So they benefit from all of those because all of those are available through the APIs. And a lot of that's then listening to the same customers they're approaching with their complete solution that maybe we're having conversations with in other territories where it's, they're overtly using Signage Live as a platform.
Hi, I'm Jeremy Gavin, CEO of ScreenFeed. Now, I'm not put off by the fact that you're not listening to this podcast to hear me. Just like audiences to any digital signage, you give your attention to content you find interesting or helpful. That's where my company ScreenFeed comes in. Our sole mission is to make your digital signage network more valuable by making content that is more valuable to your audience. If you'd like to drive more attention to your screens, visit ScreenFeed.com to explore the 75-plus content options we've created to do just that, and then give us a call. Now, back to the podcast.
Do you see headless as being a pretty significant part of your business, and will you always kind of balance the Signage Live familiar UX that some companies are going to use, or do you say a lot of them just going to headless?
I think... there's definitely a trend towards mm-hmm. more integrated solutions. People talk about user experience platforms. I heard that kind of mentioned and talked about by others. And I suppose it is about that. And it's really, whether we build that, I don't want us to be the constraint for our partner mm-hmm. or for our customer. So we will take our product and develop it where we feel it needs to go and where the mass market requires Signage Live to go. But I think what we're finding with the headless proposition is it does allow that kind of wider thought process. And so a partner or someone looking to create their own brand in the space or integrate with their own back-end digital asset management platform or workflow systems, they can decide what features they want to present to the customer. And some of those will be Signage Live, and others will be from other third-party web apps that they're talking to. You've only got to look at the way things like, Zapier have blown up over the years in terms of connecting A to B to C, to create a solution. And we want to be part of that. We integrate with low-code and no-code platforms, for example, which basically takes the development and the ability to build applications, not just, from the curly bracket, low-level coders, but puts that into community coders. They always say about low-code, if you're capable of driving a spreadsheet and creating macros, then you could build a low-code application for your business. And we want to be talking to those community developers within organizations as well, who go, do you know what, that's great, but I'd like to do something slightly different, or I need to make sure it shows not just this, but that as well from our, our other systems we have. And we want to make sure we're part of that solution.
One of the reasons I find this so interesting is it gets away from the whole idea or notion of a walled garden, which it still seems like a lot of digital signer software companies operate within, and they're not really paying attention to what the larger, particularly web-centric development world is doing.
Yeah, totally agree with that. I think that you can't win on features alone. I mean, it's a fool's errand. If you look at any organization that's making money in digital signage today, 90% of the features are going to be tick box. Yes, it's certainly when it comes to an RFP, we can all argue that we do things better or have you. So there's got to be reasons why you're successful. And I know you've covered in your podcast and your writing, Dave, that you either go super niche in a particular sector, and use case, or you provide a true platform that is pliable and capable and can, bend and flex to the needs of the kind of solutions that we're not even thinking of. These are organizations that have got particular problems we haven't even heard of yet. So we don't want to be measured or contained by our thoughts on what we think the world needs. We want the ability to go, hey, we can do this bit. We've got these APIs and capabilities. By all means, if you want us to extend those, that's exactly where we want to be spending our time. But you know the experience you want to build in terms of logging in and what you want that to do on the screen at the far end.
Mm-hmm. The other area I've nattered on about, there's a bunch of things I've nattered on about through the years, but data-driven content. And this is something that there were a handful of companies going back to, the mid-2000s, like the Omnivexes and Scribers when that was around, that were doing that sort of thing. Then it grew more common, and everybody was saying, "Yeah, sure, we can do. We've got APIs, we can tie into data tables and stuff like that." But the data sync services and secure dashboards that you're doing, you're saying this is different. This is kind of its own approach.
Yeah, I think we're trying to solve the same problem in a different way, in a more scalable and robust way. I think that's the way of looking at it. I think, I've got admiration for those that have gone before us in that sense, in terms of trying to solve the challenge of getting data from, back-end systems up into a screen in an automated, scalable and updatable way. What we're trying to do is to try and have come up with a solution whereby from the back end with secure dashboards that you can log into any web app, whether that be a Google-based app or Microsoft, any of the Microsoft suite, through to people like grow.com, who we use for our own Power BI, our own BI in business intelligence dashboards, and log in once, log in smartly, as we call it, because the system will actually, determine how it needs to log in and what it needs to press. It does all that in the back end for you. And then from that, you can determine what you want to capture and where you want that to go. And what we're effectively doing at that point is, whether it be an individual metric on a dashboard, whether it be the full dashboard itself, whatever the determined frequency needs to be, we're securely capturing that data as a JPEG. And there's a conscious reason why we've done that as a JPEG, because we want to make sure it can play back on any player that we support, not be restricted to the latest, greatest, web browser capable player, that can run super fast HTML5, because that's such a restricted market. And then deliver that content securely to screens. So we've seen a big need for that. I think one of the things we wanted to avoid was a reliance on having to do this through, you know, creating a macro with a Chrome extension that you have to run through that sequence in a browser to capture your dashboard, and then it saves it back to the server and it says, don't worry, I've got that, I'll do that again. We wanted to do this centrally and do it once, so that if something changes, you know, you can go in, make a single change, and all your dashboards will then be republished to the screen. We've also, with that solution, and working through the initial beta customers that we've got, realized one of the key aspects is what happens when things go wrong. So we've built a complete debugger in there. So it actually walks you through every single stage that we're doing and the macros that it's running in the back to say, right, we've got to this. We've now pressed this button. We've cleared that pop-up that come up. Don't worry, right now we've grabbed the metric. Is this what it looks like? Yep, that's what I'm going to send to the screen. So mm-hmm. you can script that as you need to go and capture the data. So we're having tremendous response from organizations looking to get that data out of their backend systems and their web apps and securely get that in front of their their users on screens in the various departments. Big application, obviously, with deskless workers in particular, and getting data out. We're working with one big logistics organization at the moment who, you know, have got updates in terms of the status for goods in, goods out, mm-hmm. buried in a proprietary system, and they want that at the dispatch base. Across 100 locations. And so we can show them how that works. They set it up once and away it goes. And that's it. And it will just keep publishing that. And obviously it can still be interspersed. You can still multi-zone it. You can run it with other content as required. But it's very much a Trojan horse for a lot of organizations because it's being the one thing that's been particularly tricky. And they don't want to get into having to, well, I can get that data out into a data table and then I've got to ingress it and then I've got to map that into some form of layout in a third-party CMS before I can then get it onto the screen. They want to do this in its native form in the dashboards and the tables that they are using in their web app every single day.
If it's a JPEG, that's going to limit you in terms of the frequency of update, at least a little bit, or you're going to have a bandwidth issue as well. But I'm assuming there aren't really that many applications out there that need true real time. As you know, as something's changing every second or whatever, if it's production status or whatever, every minute or even every 5 minutes is probably fine, I assume.
Absolutely, that, yeah, and that's what we're finding, and we are asking that question, and there are solutions to real time, but it just isn't this technology. It's not built for this, and real time is more a case of building those custom HTML5 widgets and connecting to a data point somewhere and having that auto refresh. And you know, we have those too. You know, we have those bespoke instances where people need that level of update, you know, as it happens, push updates. But for the vast majority, as you quite rightly said, it's more a case of I need to know what the stats are today within the last hour. You know, I need to know what's happened in the last 5 minutes. So we more than, you know, cope with that at scale using the Secure Dashboards platform.
Yeah, I mean, I'm curious when you talk about desk workers and production floors and so on. I've thought this is still a somewhat untapped opportunity for the digital signage market to get mission critical information out to people who don't have desktop monitors that they're staring at all day, or don't have emails or anything else. And how do you keep them informed? And it seems like this is a particularly good way to do it.
Yeah, absolutely that. And I think, you know, one of the things that we're excited by is the number of applications we've never heard of before that people are testing. You know, there's the, you know, we've got on our website 30, 40 applications that we test, and we just continue adds. And we've got a G sheet that we update pretty much every day with new applications. We've gone, yep, that works, you know, add it to the list. But, you know, we're working with a big mining organization who've used some platform I've never heard of before. They tested it, they got it working. Great, let's use it. And they want to deploy that to all the locations where they're drilling and mining, and you can show the performance statistics there. So that's the thing that's exciting, because we've built this in a really, you know, open, agnostic way. We're not saying that, oh, we've got a particular integration for Power BI, or we've got a particular integration for Salesforce or Tableau or all the other leading ones. We've built it in a way that it'll accommodate all of those. And if it works for all of those, it'll work for any others as well.
Can you get into some of the more exotic platforms, like an SAP ERP platform, that kind of thing?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it really comes down to user access. You know, how are people currently accessing that data? So if you were logging into to that platform, you know, through username, password, authentication, single sign-on, for example, and you can navigate from your browser to that content that you want to display. And I say it can be a full screen, it can be just a zone on the screen that you want to capture, an XY set of coordinates, then it will work. If you could do it from your browser, we can do it from the back end and set that up. So yeah, it's you know, very doable. I think the other aspect of this is the actual, as you mentioned, data sync services that this is built on top of, Secure Dashboards is built on top of, which is the underlying platform. There will be other modules alongside that. You know, we will be looking at certain instances where it actually makes sense to have dedicated apps for maybe SAP. Maybe there's some additional functionality that we need to get out of Salesforce, right? Well, let's build a custom integration with Salesforce at that point. Or as we're finding with others, there's just custom data set there. Do we need an agent somewhere on a server that's grabbing the data that brings it back through the same machine that we've built and pushes it, you know, whether it be in a graphic or into a HTML5 page, but uses this data sync services platform to achieve that in a very secure way?
I assume when this gets raised with corporate clients, they're very concerned about the security implications. How do you deal with that?
Yeah, absolutely. Security at the core from our point of view. So we're completely transparent in terms of how the platform has been built. We're open to inspection. We've been running quarterly penetration tests on our whole platform since 2015. And we make those available under NDA to prospective customers and existing customers. And you know, in addition to that, we obviously last year achieved ISO 27001. We're extending that out across the world as well. So, you know, we take data and data security at the, you know, the highest level. And yeah, we want to make sure we're open and honest with our customers in terms of what we're doing with their data, how we're encrypting their data. And we're open for that to be, you know, fully tested. So I think, you know, there's not been an instance, and we've got some pretty significant organizations across a range of sectors who've, you know, we've passed their security tests with flying colors. And in many cases, they're saying, you know, you're taking security to a level that we're not even doing ourselves because we're not exposed. We haven't yet got there. You know, you're dealing with things from a variety of different angles that we just don't currently have in our business. So it does give them the confidence that we've got those angles covered.
Let's wrap this up on a broader topic that doesn't require the same technical acumen. I'm just curious, how are things going? How is the business coming out of, well, hopefully coming out of COVID?
Yeah, good. You know, I think like everyone, it was when, you know, May 2020, you know, approached, and we seen the early signs of what was happening with COVID. There was a bit of kind of sharp intake of breath for everyone to think, right, where's this going to leave us? As it was, you know, we had a very strong year. I mean, we did right by our customers. We made sure that those that were struggling, we paused all of their payments, certainly if they were on monthly billing with us, and said, look, just come back when you can. And that's bounced back tremendously for those that we were able to support. If it was organizations that had bought term licenses, you know, multi-year licenses, et cetera, we made sure we extended those licenses as long as was viable for both parties to ensure that they could shut those down and not lose that license usage as such. You know, so when they come back online, then we're not, you know, asking them to renew. And that's been fantastic. And I think the, you know, we're able to grow. We added 5 people to the headcount at the back end of last year, and seen some of those announcements probably coming through on LinkedIn. So, you know, we've done well. We grew again last year. And I think the core thing is we are, you know, very much focused on the two strategies, one of which is going very much into the upper mid-market and enterprise customers. And as I mentioned earlier, in terms of the functionality that we're developing in the core platform itself, but then equally is very much this approach towards headless. And, you know, whilst there's other organizations that provide, you know, really good solutions for agnostic device support and building your CMS on top of those platforms, we go the next stage. You know, we've actually given you a full headless CMS and device support platform. And I think that's one of the key areas that we're looking to grow. So if organizations are either entering the market and want to get into digital signage with their own brand solution, we want to be there for them to have that conversation.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, what you just finished saying, it's so important to think about the infrastructure and the real tools as opposed to the pretty UX and, you know, the capability to support some particular piece of functionality. Like, who cares? Everybody does it.
Yeah, exactly. And then also the pedigree. You know, we've got customers that have been with us for decades, literally now. And mm-hmm. I think, we've been at this for a long time. Since 97 from my point of view. So we're a long way in, but we only feel as though this aspect of the market is opening up now. You know, the days of, say, fighting out on the UX features and capabilities and hoping you've ticked the boxes that particular customer wants is I'm not saying it's gone, but it's certainly going or being caught up by organization going, right, how do mm-hmm. I code my own solution on top of your APIs?
Yeah, and if you're going mid to high level enterprise work, the whole race to the bottom price fight kind of goes away, right?
Yeah, 100%. And this is why we've seen a massive push with regards to people moving on to plans. It just makes sense. Mm-hmm. You know, it was always licenses and then networks and then, you know, adding maybe training to a network or to a customer. And then you start adding additional modules and Active Directory and, you know, secure sign-on and all those things. And for many reasons, those organizations don't want to buy in piecemeal. It's a big lift yeah. for them to actually get a PO through their organization. So they just want to say, look, I know what I want to achieve. I know roughly how many players I'm going to put online in the next, 6 months. So you can give me some flexibility there. But can I just at least have all the bits in place to get this up and running, keep all the departments happy, keep IT happy, and that I don't have to go back to procurement every month when you turn around and say, you need this additional module. So the move towards the plan structure has been a real positive for us, for those mid-market enterprise customers where they expect that.
Hmm. Jason, great to catch up with you.
No, you're welcome. Thank you very much for the opportunity to talk to you again, Dave.
That's it for this week's episode. I hope you enjoyed it and maybe you learned a thing or two. If you're new to 69, it's a podcast that's been around since 2016. You can click around the archive and find hundreds of conversations with smart industry people. If you're new to digital signage, you need to be reading 16.9 at 16-9.net. You'll find more than 8,000 posts by me and expert guest writers about this industry. 16.9 is not a press release republishing mill like a lot of the stuff out there. If something makes it on 16.9, that means it matters in some way to the business. Everything about 16.9 is free. Great sponsors make my work possible, and the key one here is ScreenFeed, the digital signage content store. Check out all the curated and automated content available at ScreenFeed.com. 16.9, the blog, and the podcast are now owned by Spectrio, which does customer engagement solutions, most of that digital signage, for all kinds of businesses. You'll find them in the Tampa area and online at Spectrio. That's Spectrio.com. You'll find me working out of a sunny back room in my house located outside Halifax, Nova Scotia, on the east coast of Canada. Thanks for listening. I'm Dave Haynes.